Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Where are we doing
you,
that?
You do,
No, come on. You've got to do this as well.
Right, sit up straight.
You do sorted food. Are you there?
And breathe deep.
Sorted food. Are you there? Go.
Sorted food.
Are you there? Ben, you're a much better singer. Your throat's closed. You're like this. Are you there? Are you there? Getting better. I mean, you do sound like Kermit, but yeah, it is getting better.
Halfway up the stairs, there's
the sphere I sit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Under the Cloche, the podcast where we don't lift the cloche on food, but people. And we try and find the most fascinating people from the most interesting walks of life and understand how food plays a part in that journey. And boys, I mean, I'm buzzing for today's guest.
I can tell Ben, you're itchy.
I think this is going to be great. This person, I think, is already going to be my new best friend.
Absolutely iconic, especially in the UK.
Definitely.
Because I think he's one of the most memorable TV advert characters that we've ever seen.
Yeah, but also the main fact is this guy is an opera singer.
Yeah.
So, boys, the fact that we are in our own pub at the moment, what do you think of the vibe so far?
Well, when we were putting this together, and Ebba's first thought was, is it a pub or is it a nan's living room?
These sofas were sourced from a nan's living room. I can guarantee
and none
that.
Of our nans.
No.
They are secondhand nan these are, furniture. Yeah.
We're calling it a pub, but obviously we need people in the pub playing the pub roles. We need a landlord or landlady. We need, is it a gastro pub? I mean, these are
foodie
all
foodie chefs.
These
we
are
need
Christians.
We need bar people. We need the gardener.
We need the local propped up against the bar, don't we?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. There's always yeah. Who's in the booth in the corner? I feel like the vibe is very booth in the corner of the pub.
Yeah, yeah. Staying out of everyone's way. Yeah. Is what you're saying.
All I'm hoping is that the food that we serve here is slightly higher quality than a very traditional British pub.
Well, I reckon every week we get a new guest under the cloche, we ask them for one of their favourite foodie moments of all time, and that just goes on the weekly special board.
You're going to cook them up their favourite food of all time?
No.
Each week?
No, I'm going to write it on a chalkboard.
Oh, right, okay. And then Cushy's going to bring it out.
Yeah.
Love that. So, yeah, I mean, Wyn Evans, what do you think? What role would he play at our pub?
Oh,
he's got to be front of house.
He's
right?
got good.
But it's pub quiz night. Surely he's the host of pub quiz night.
Host the pub quiz.
He could host the pub quiz or the karaoke. I mean, let's just.
But I also think you're missing a trick by not having him in the kitchen because he won Celebrity MasterChef and he's clearly a phenomenal cook as well.
Right. So you two are the ones who are going to be interviewing Mr. Go Compare.
Yeah. I'd say it's more of a chat.
Okay, a casual chat. But please, there's a couple of questions that myself and Jamie need to leave with you. The first one, Jamie's is asking...
Sensible one.
Yeah, start a sensible one. Jamie wants to know, are there any foods that help him with his singing voice or hinder him?
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine is... So I've seen this thing online that is possible to break a wine glass with your voice. If you can match the same tone.
I've seen that an awful lot.
Frequency.
It's always in cartoons. It's like Tom and Jerry, isn't it? It's always in silly cartoons.
Yeah. So you've actually seen someone do it?
Yeah,
it is possible.
Mike Boyd did it on his channel. So I'm like, again.
And you want Wynn to break a wine glass live on a podcast?
He could shatter that window.
That is dangerous. Our pub is full of glassware.
Okay, we'll ask him that for sure.
We'll ask him if he's up for it.
Have you got a wine glass?
We'll find one.
Of course he has.
You could do an Asahi bottle.
Yeah, oh, sorry, do you have an empty wine glass?
Yes. Oh, they're all empty.
Okay.
So our guest today is actor, opera singer, celebrity MasterChef winner, and iconic operatic insurance salesman, Wynn Evans. Welcome to Under the Cloche. It's great to have you here.
You see me in the ads. Acting is a stretch, right? So maybe you shouldn't say that.
One of the best caricatures of any opera singer.
It's one of the most iconic advertising people or characters we've ever had. So for our audience who aren't based in the UK, can you just explain a little bit about why we keep banging on about the Go Compare opera singer?
I like to explain it like this. It's like I'm like a British version of George Clooney. Boom.
I'm not, right? You are to insurance comparison sites what George Clooney is to Nespresso.
The Go Compare advert, people say it's annoying, it's effective. It's an advert that's been running in the UK for 15 years where this fat, portly singer turns up in unexpected places and tells people the virtue of comparing their car insurance to get cheaper prices. And I've had a lot of people ask me for quotes when I'm out.
Really?
Yeah. A woman in a field once asked me.
You're like, yeah,
let
sure.
me just check. Let me just check for you.
Well, she no claims. Yeah.
Well, no, she said to me like this, right? She goes, oh, hello, I'm glad I've seen you. I was actually working at the time for the BBC, right? I was with the camera crew. And I said, oh, could you just give me a minute, love? And she goes, no, can I just ask you a quick question? I was like, just give me a moment. So I'm doing this. Welcome to Llangollen, the sights and sounds of the international... Excuse me, can we just have a quick word with you? And she goes, I go, oh, all right. So, and I go, what do you want? And she goes, no, my daughter's just turned 17. We're thinking about buying her a little Clio and we wondered what the insurance would be, right? So I go, you are? I said, you know I don't sell insurance. I'm just an opera singer in an insurance advert, don't you? And so she goes, and then she wouldn't shut up, right? She kept going and going and going. I thought there's only one way to get rid of this woman, right? And I remember it to this day, like an out-of-body experience, when I turned to her and I said, what's your postcode, right? So she tells me her postcode, and then I say to her, like a dick, right? Like an absolute fool, I go, are you keeping the car on the drive or the roadway, right? Classic question. And she tells me...
Is it for business or leisure?
Yeah, it was that kind of thing. How many miles are you doing a year? I thought, I've got to make it sound official. And so I thought, well, look, she's just 17, just passed her test. So I go like it. It's going to be about £3,000. I'm in the middle of a field. It's going to be about £3,000. And she turned to me. She goes, well, that's a rip-off. It's only £2,400 with direct line. She just left me there in the field. She walked, she stormed away. So, yeah, that's what I do for a living.
So we eat all day, every day, but what's the one time that you can remember as being just that moment that was just so special? What was it and why was it so special? Because it's going on our specials board.
Okay, well, I had this bizarre experience, right? So I'm out in Lyon because I was working at the Opera House in Lyon, right, in France. And Paul Bocuse is from Lyon, right, who basically created Michelin, right?
Yeah.
So he's got this place out there called Les Halles Paul Bocuse, which is like where producers go and they just, the very best of the French produce goes there. And you can have like a drink from there, an oyster from there, some saucisson from there. You can have bread from over there. You can just do whatever you want. Anyway, so I'm there, right? And I've got a bit of everything. And I've had a couple. And I'm with a guy who was playing rugby for Lyon at the time, another Welsh guy called Hugh Bennett. This girl goes, do you mind if I join you? Right? So I'm going, yeah, pull up a chair. She goes, I just heard you talking English. I'm feeling a bit homesick. She was American, right? Feeling a bit homesick. So we're there and we've literally got some oysters and some saucisson and some bread. I love those little bits, those little nibbles that you have, right? So I was talking to her. I said, oh, what do you do for a living? She goes, oh, I play a bit of football. turns out that this footballer was Megan Rapinoe, right? Who has got like gazillions of followers on the internet. That is an absolute icon in America.
World Cup winner.
World Cup winner, Olympic gold medalist, Champions League winner, you know, everything. Turned down tea with Trump, you know, she is a proper icon. So that would probably be my foodgasm, I guess, you know, just eating little nibbles like that in really relaxed surroundings, drinking loads of really cold white wine.
Superb.
I feel like you must have travelled in your early life as an opera singer. Like, where are the best places that have like opened up amazing food experiences when you've been there?
I suppose Spain is really good, you know, because you do get loads of fresh fish. I love the tapas. Like I said, I love the little dish. Just a quick note to people watching or listening. If you're going on a date, right, because I got divorced when I was like 45, so I was back on the dating scene at 45, right? Don't go for tapas on a date, right? Because nobody wants to eat anything. This is what I've realised later on.
No one wants the last mouthful of anything, so you're left with some of everything.
And you're drinking like it's going out of fashion.
Yeah.
So the next thing, you're totally off your face and there's like bits of food left on the tip that you're scared to eat. So yeah, I love America. I love everything about American food. I love burgers. I love a dirty burger.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a top quality
one. Are you a double patty or a single patty?
Oh, double every time. Yeah, whatever the biggest
smash
is.
Burgers.
I could do three, four.
A triple patty.
I was a year ago, I was 23 stone. I've lost 7 stone in the last year. So I've had to kind of give up the bread and the burgers and the cheese. Mm-hmm. I love cheese.
And what was it that was the weight loss driver? Like, was there one particular thing or?
I think, this is so embarrassing, right? And I've never told anybody this, right? So I hope it doesn't kind of do that thing, right? I went camping and I sat on a chair. And it just smashed underneath me. So I thought, I'll sit on that chair instead. And that smashed as well. And I thought, this has to come to an end because I'm smashing chairs left, right, and centre.
The universe is trying to tell me.
Why can I imagine that was actually just the next advert? I feel like that is in character, like, camping equipment. Have you got it insured? Like, that is literally, that's it.
It should have been. It should have been. So that was the moment. And I just started walking a lot. I cut out the cheese. Under 2,000 calories a day. Drinking a bit less.
Saving the drink for the special occasions.
Yeah, definitely. And trying to get everything under control, really. Because I could eat a cheese sandwich while I'm cooking.
Yeah. And so are you cooking a lot at home? Like, are you at home enough to be regularly cooking? Or are you cooking for sort of mates or friends, family?
I suppose that's the problem, Nick. You're away a lot. You don't do these big shops. You just do little shops.
Yeah.
It's a pain. But I cook a lot at home.
Yeah.
And my son cooks a lot.
Oh, great.
Yeah, my daughter cooks as well. Yeah, he's really he introduced me to stuff like, because it was like just pre-lockdown and stuff. So he's watching a lot of YouTube, watching a lot of socials. So he's finding all these chefs that I like know, but don't really know.
Yeah.
And he comes up to me, I think he was about 30, and he goes, Dad, we really must get a sous vide machine now. I was like,
good lad.
A sous vide machine. I said, I've absolutely no idea what that is, mate. And so he's taught me a lot, actually.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Is that just something that came naturally because as a family, you've got that passion, interest of food? Or is that something you actually went out to, I'm going to get my kids into cooking and cooking early and understanding that as a skill? Because, I mean, you had that growing up, but I think our kind of generation, we weren't really taught at school. Unless we were taught by our parents, we sort of came across food and the skill of learning to cook when it became a necessity. It's like, I'm at uni or I'm on my own. I've got to learn and figure this thing out. So with your kids, is it something that you sort of specifically thought, well, I'm going to get them into that, I'm going to teach them?
My mother was petrified that we were going to become butch rugby players. So she sent me for cookery lessons and ballroom dancing from about the age of 7. So every week we'd go to cookery outside of school. Every week we'd go dancing. And so it was just a really natural thing. When we were in college, my brother and myself, because we both were opera singers and we both had the same kind of upbringing, like everybody would come around to us for food because we lived above the old Spitalfields market.
Oh, wow.
So every day you had this abundance of fruit and veg. And you could get it like for free, going downstairs, I live upstairs, can I get some fruit and veg? Yeah, just have what's left. And then you'd make, I mean, we made some absolute minging stuff. Yeah. Some good stuff. Can I give you my mother's recipe for spaghetti bolognese?
Yeah.
So this is going now back to the 70s, right? In Carmarthen, in deepest, darkest West Wales, right? You might want to write this down because it's quite complicated.
But we'll watch this back.
Okay. One tin of Campbell's tomato soup.
Gotcha.
One tin of corned beef. There we go.
I mean, that is Italian through and through.
Yeah. Add spaghetti. And that, I don't know, maybe you're too young to remember, right? But we used to have parmesan in a pot that smelled like sick.
Oh, yeah, vomit.
It was horrible, yeah. So we'd have that on the top as well with corned beef and Campbell's soup.
Oh, my goodness, I haven't thought about that. And I've just been taken back to being 7 years old. Yeah. And that
cheese dust.
The cheese dust. And it did smell like vomit. Oh, my goodness.
And it lived in the dry store, never went anywhere near a fridge.
No, God, no. Don't leave it near the fridge.
No.
It'll go off. So that was my mother. But she was quite a good cook at other things. She was Belgian, my mother was. So she could do the tomate crevette, which is like prawns and tomatoes and sorts of potatoes. But she used to think that Italian food was just for, you know, other people. So when we'd have spaghetti bolognese, that was it.
That was the classic.
It was disgusting. So we had a lot of corned beef, a lot of liver, a lot of the stuff that you wouldn't kind of probably eat.
And yeah, that probably is the big stereotype. When you think of opera singer, you probably think of big bowls of spaghetti and meatballs, pizza, lots of Italian classics. Yeah. Like, that is a stereotypical image.
Yeah.
And that is also kind of the role and the character you played for many years.
Yeah.
Has food ever been a part of that kind of conversation?
Look, totally. When I came back from my first day in school, my mother said to me, what was school like? I said, school was awful, but the restaurant's good, right?
Okay.
I just loved the lunch. I live to eat. I don't eat to live. I absolutely adore food. I love everything about it. I love going to markets and seeing the fresh produce and all of this. I went to Puglia a few years ago on my holidays where they make the orecchietti, which is the pasta that's like made with your thumb.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you have that and burrata, which is, you know, basically mozzarella injected with double cream. Yeah. I mean, these are the things I absolutely love. Lovely olive oil, you know, lovely things like that. So, but pasta, yeah. I mean, if I had to take one cuisine on a desert island with me, it would be Italian.
Yeah.
Because I think they've got everything.
They've nailed it. And it's so, like, it is so simple. It's so just simple. Knowing how to combine the simple ingredients.
Good ingredients.
Yeah. Like fresh, my grandmother was Belgian. My great-grandmother was Belgian. And they were quite well off. And she used to call it peasant's food because it's so simple. Mm. You know, you think of pasta, it's just flour and eggs, right? Yeah. That's it.
And so wonderfully regional. Like, you move from one town to another and the dishes and the kind of recipes change and they're passed down through generation. Do you find that in Wales that there are kind of like lost recipes? Recipes that haven't necessarily travelled nearly as much as the Italian cuisine has the world over.
Yeah.
I feel like Welsh is a cuisine that not so many people know beyond maybe lamb and Welsh cakes.
I mean, there's a lot more. There's, like you were saying about pasta, you know, and regionality, lamb changes so much. If you have, there's Brecon lamb, which is delicious, comes from the venison farm, bizarrely, in Brecon. They keep sheep as well. That is beautiful lamb, and it's very, very tender, very, very mild tasting lamb. Then you go to the salt marsh where they eat a lot of samphire, the sheep do and stuff, and you get that saltiness in the lamb.
Season through.
So it's properly seasoned. So they're two totally different, brilliant products. But there's loads of recipes, you know, cockles, mussels.
It was a huge coastline.
Yeah, massive. Mussels, fish, lobster, crabs, oysters now is a massive thing that's farmed and native oysters down there. So you've got the native oysters in North Wales on the Menai Straits, and then you've got farmed oysters in Pembrokeshire, and lava bread. That's probably one of the lost ones. And you think how mad we go for nori, right?
Yeah.
And sushi and stuff like this. Yeah, we don't eat lava bread.
So nutritious, so affordable. But it's one of those things I think people are sometimes scared by it or confused by it because lava...
Well, yeah, what exactly is it for people who don't know?
It's seaweed washed through and through and through and boiled up. That is it, right? But it looks like a baby's first poo. Yeah. That's what it looks like. Yeah. It looks
sometimes
disgusting.
Have some oats in it as well to bind it. Or is it just seaweed? You know, it's almost paste-like,
lava bread
isn't
is
it?
Just the seaweed, right? And then you can add to it. So you can fry it up with cockles, you can add flour to it and oats and make it into little cakes. On MasterChef, I use it a lot on MasterChef because it's just another way of putting salt into your food. Mm. It's really good. Yeah. And it's a different kind of salt.
And it has that umami, it's the natural umami.
Oh, it's just amazing. I made these pommes dauphines, right? Which, if you ever want... So I've had this... Oh, here we go.
I don't want to interrupt you.
Well, you did interrupt.
I know, I'm sorry, but you were talking about Welsh cakes.
Oh, my word.
So I thought we might bring in some Welsh cakes for you. Now, some were made by our podcast producer, Fionn.
Yeah.
Some were made by a chef.
Yeah.
One of them's Welsh.
I'll leave it up to you to decide.
Yeah. I think Fionn should invest in a cutter for the house, shouldn't she? Instead of just doing it with whatever she can find.
A shot glass.
Yeah.
So if you fancy the Welsh cake, feel free.
Oh, yeah, can I take one of each and do a taste test?
Nice. Comparison.
Yes.
Nice.
And then we also have some bar snacks.
Jay.
Bar, great. Can't wait for that. Crisp.
Don't look at me like this. Ben opened them.
Well, crisp.
Classic bar. Have a Welsh cake.
Take a Welsh cake.
You made these, didn't you?
Like, yes, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. It is so, so simple. It's pretty much four ingredients with an egg, a few currants, and on the griddle, and yet they taste so, so good, especially when they're still warm. These ones aren't warm.
Fionn's are good.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they're quite moist in the middle.
A little
That's
bit of
the danger.
Spice in them as well.
Yeah, a little bit of cinnamon in those. Know,
be honest.
You got a bit of crunch on yours. Do you cook them on a stone?
On a cast iron griddle, so not a stone, but...
No, because the Welsh one is cast iron.
Oh, is it?
Mm. The Welsh one should be cast iron, yeah.
But what's your favourite?
I'm going to have to go with yours, I'm afraid.
Oh,
thank you.
I mean, I like Fionn's. I do like Fionn's, they are nice, but...
More homely. So how often, I kind of feel like...
I mean, we don't just sit there eating Welsh cakes all day.
No.
If that's what you're going to ask.
No, that was my, next question.
You brought me in here to stereotype.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We've bounced from cockles to lava bread to Welsh cakes, but how often is the Welsh produce celebrated day in and day out?
Not enough. We don't shout about it enough, you know? Mm. I made this commitment when I went on MasterChef to only use Welsh produce, which I did by accident, because the first couple of dishes, I thought I'll do what I know. So I did a rack of lamb, Welsh lamb. Then I did faggots, right? Do you know what faggots are?
Yeah.
It's basically like heart, liver.
Yeah.
Just awful in cool fat. Yeah.
Just awful, right? And that was the one we had to serve to past winners. And I went out and then I thought, what a dick. Why have I made something that famously turns people's stomach, heart and liver? Why have I made this for a tasting? So I got Vicky Patterson, Rylan and Andy Peters there.
And I
go, here we go, here's a faggot. And they go, oh, what's a faggot? And I said, it's like a Welsh meatball.
Yeah, that's
as specific as I want.
Welsh sausage, yeah.
It cost like 10 pence to make, you know.
How'd it go down?
They loved it. Then I told them what was in it. So, yeah, so that was that. But the best thing I did with lava bread, now, if you've never made these at home, right, you have to do it. You'll know exactly what they are, right? Pommes dauphines. Oh my God, that is like, get a defibrillator in the house first,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because they are like, this is my dream, right? To open a restaurant called the Angina Diner, right? Who thought to mix mashed potato with choux pastry? It's like
genius.
A profiterole. It is genius. And you deep fat fry it, right? So good. And then I injected lava bread into the middle with creme fraiche, just a couple of extra calories. And so when you bite into it, you get this burst of saltiness. It's just like, oh, so delicious.
And yet, you're so right that seaweed is popular as a superfood
from
Japan. And it's something, you know, we absolutely love sort of Japanese nori and all the different seaweeds that we can get out there. But it's not something we celebrate enough of.
No, here. Not at all. Not at all.
Can I ask
anything
about... Oh, fantastic. So going back to your operatic background, how did you get into that? And then I'm so sorry to keep bringing this up, but how on earth did that move you into the Go Compare opportunity and how that turned into what it did?
So my mother and father, my mother was a hairdresser, my father was a builder, right? But they also were involved in youth opera, amateur dramatics. Yeah. My mother decided that the town needed a theatre. And so she kind of squatted in this theatre until the council said, all right, you can have this theatre, right? So she had the theatre. So I was about 10 or 12 at the time. But they needed this film, right? So this has been made into a movie by Sky, right? This has. They needed a film to kind of launch it. And so my mum chose Jurassic Park, right? I don't know if you know this story. Yeah. But the film distributor said the day before, or a couple of days before, that there wasn't enough copies to go around. So my mother went to see the mayor of Carmarthen. Now, Carmarthen is a small market town in West Wales with about 15,000 people. The mayor was the local postman, right? But he was his term to be the mayor, right? So my mother goes to see him, and he goes, I guess, oh, this is terrible, Liz, especially, you know, you're saving this theatre and all of this. He said, what we'll have to do is we'll have to ring Steven Spielberg, right? So my mother goes, oh, that's a brilliant idea. We've got to ring him. So they ring Spielberg's office,
enough.
Right?
Yeah.
And, of course, the mayor in America is massive, right? It's like a really important job. So this guy goes on the phone. He goes, oh, yeah, it's the mayor of Carmarthen in Wales, yeah? Which quickly became the mayor of Wales, right? Next thing, my mother's on the phone to Spielberg, right?
No.
And she's telling him the story about this theatre that she saved and this youth opera and how it's got kids. Because the whole youth opera was made up of kids from underprivileged backgrounds. And so she's telling him this story, and he says, oh, God, I'll send you my copy of the film, Stel Spielberg, right? So he sent
his... got a director's cut.
Well, not quite, mate, not quite, but not far off. And he says, and I tell you what, instead of the premiere in London, you can have it in Carmarthen. Right? So the premiere of Jurassic Park was in Carmarthen in West Wales.
That actually happened.
So that's kind of how I got into theatre, because I was around theatre all the time. Then I went to the Guildhall School of Music, studied there, was principal at Scottish Opera, Welsh National Opera, Royal Opera House. And my mate rang me up, and I'd done this other advert, right, for, hang on.
Yep.
Crisps, right? Walker's Crisps. That was Gary Lineker's voice. And he was pushing the late Tara Palmer Tomkinson on a swing. So I had to go... Where is my love? I'm here, my love. I have brought crisps for you. Right? And it was like this. It was meant to be like a spoof opera. Anyway, my mate wrote the music for it, and then he'd written the music for this other advert, and he said, oh, you've got to come and do this advert. I said, oh, I don't really want to do it. So I rock up at the advert. Eventually, they agreed to pay me to go to the audition, right? So I went to the audition. What I didn't realise is that the company that I was auditioning for, which turned out to be Go Compare, was a Welsh company, and it was owned by...
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A Welsh lady, she devised it. And she had said, look, if you can have the same guy in the advert that is singing, that would be brilliant. If he was a little bit fat... that would be incredible, because she'd always struggled with her weight a bit. And she said, and one last thing, she said, I mean, if he was Welsh, that would be like off the scale, right? So they said, because these people that were making the ad was a couple called Chris and Sharon Wilkins, advertising royalty, right? Mm. You're too young to remember, but they did the Mash Get Smash Aliens in the 70s, all the Hamlet adverts through the 80s. We're talking Sheila's Wheels, Michael Winner, It's Only a Commercial. You know, they did all of those adverts. And... I rock up, and they're kind of going, who's this guy? So I kind of go, over there, because it was a song called Over There, right?
Yep.
That they changed to Go Compare. So I start singing, and they go, right, can you do a Welsh accent? So I kind of went, Go Compare, and all of that. And they went, oh, what about Italian? So like, I'm kind of going, Go Compare, Go Compare, when you in short. And they went, this is it, right?
So it's like, so good.
This is so good. And that's how I got the job.
I mean, how quickly did it sort of escalate from there?
I remember it came out on August the 18th, 2009, right? And I went for dinner the night before with the writers, and they said, we'd made five of these adverts, right? We'd shot five in a week. And the first one that came out was called Coffee Shop.
Yeah, that's where I slid iconic across, one, right? Yeah.
And the guy goes, oh, it's only a tenner, right? I think your life's going to change tomorrow, they said. I was like, I don't think so. It's an advert. Like, I'd done the crisp advert. I knew that you don't really get recognised or anything, you know. It came out, and there was three things about this ad that kind of were different. It had a massive TV spend, huge. It had that jingle, which was really catchy.
Familiar, yeah.
And it was the first massive advert, I suppose, within the age of social networking.
Mm.
So people could instantly tell you what they thought of it.
Mm. Yeah.
And God.
Yeah, for good and for bad.
I remember, right? Just afterwards, I went on holiday to France. And actually, I booked this villa. I don't know why I booked it. It was next door to a slaughterhouse, but that was another story. my mate messages me and he goes, oh, I've seen your ad on the telly. What a shame. There's more hate members than people that like you. So I had a look. I hate when heaven's the gold campaign man, right? It was on Facebook. And there was quite a few members. So I thought, oh, what I'll do is, right, I'll look up somebody that I really don't like and I'll see how many people dislike them. It'll give me a gauge on how hated I am, yeah. Right? So I thought about Nick Griffin, right? Remember, he used to run the British National Party, right? Yeah. Not a nice bloke, right? Not a nice bloke. So I tell you, 75,000 people were a member of I Hate Nick Griffin on Facebook. I hate Wyn Evans, the good campaign man. 2.75 million, right? So I was like, oh my God.
The most hated.
I am so hated. I was voted the most hated man in Britain for 3 years, right? And it was like, oh my God, it took so much getting used to.
But that is remarkable because it's so deliberately tongue-in-cheek and not serious. Yeah. It's not like you were taking yourself or the role seriously, and yet people still thought it was real.
That's social media. That is social media.
I thought people would just go, oh, this is funny.
Yeah.
It's a fat guy in a suit. Yeah. You know, that was it. So, yeah, so that was pretty grim.
Yeah. I mean, how did you deal with that?
I didn't because handle it brilliantly at first, no. I've got to be honest.
Because it's tough. I mean, from what we do as well, you are putting yourself out there and there are keyboard warriors. There are people who just don't think, they type.
Yeah.
And you have to almost go through this sort of process of being able to read or not read and shut it out and retain some sort of logic and context. But how did you find that and how did you deal with it moving forward?
I think it's very hard at the start once you've been called whatever once, though. By the time you get to the 700th time that day, you're like, oh, well. It takes a long getting used to. People forget, like, you guys, me, we're here today filming this because we're just, like, making a living.
Yeah.
You know, we want to pay the mortgage. We want to feed the kids. That's it.
And you carried on performing professionally opera throughout all of this.
Yeah.
So
you'd
still get all of that applause and standing ovation in that world. Yeah, it was just the hate that you get when you put the moustache on.
Yeah, it was grim. And then I thought, I don't care. And I just got on with it.
Lean into it.
Yeah, really.
It's quite liberating. And the fact that you're... It's really nice to be able to chat to you about it because for us on the interim, like you said, we're that generation who are like, that's iconic. Like, this is so cool. And there are a lot of people who probably have some sort of cultural significance in a way similarly that are like, well, that's not what I really do. Like, that's not my thing and don't really lean into it. But you seem really willing to talk about it and celebrate it and
look, it made me, right? Yeah. I wouldn't be here talking to you. I wouldn't have done MasterChef. I wouldn't have my own show on Radio Wales. I wouldn't be doing Radio 2. I wouldn't be doing any of that without the Go Compare advert. So I think, why would I? I once interviewed Kiki D, right?
Right.
And she didn't want to talk about Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
Yeah,
I was like,
that's it.
Well, why?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to? Yeah, and it was interesting, actually, what people like turn their back on those things. I think I get it all the time. You know, people singing at me.
Across the street.
Constantly. In the toilet. and you think, is this appropriate? Is it appropriate? Somebody once
asked.
What
are they asking you to compare?
I know. It's like, this is going to be very embarrassing for you, Sunshine. But somebody once asked me for a selfie. I'll never forget it, right? I was at my grandmother's funeral. And somebody's going, oh, can I have a selfie? And I remember them taking the selfie and you could see the coffin in the background.
Where's the line? Because yeah, apparently not there.
There is no line. I don't mind it at all. Honestly, I kind of celebrate it. I love it. I think it's just part of me and it's, you know.
I mean, it's what is fascinating, certainly for me, is, you know, you've trained and become elite in something in... as an opera singer.
Yeah.
And then that's afforded you another opportunity into a complete curveball and taking you in somewhere that you'd never dreamed of. That's blown up. But then also there's another evolution to the story as well in terms of the other media opportunities you'd be able to do with the radio shows, but also then leading to something like Celebrity MasterChef. Like, how did that come about? And yeah, like how... I'm fascinated as to how they actually go about filming that and whether you're serving food cold. Are you waiting in a separate room with the judges? How does it work?
Firstly, the judges are really distant. You don't see them at all unless you're in the kitchen. They're very, very professional like that. I mean, I know them both now separately.
Yeah.
And you literally, the first time you walk into that kitchen is...
Is it?
You see it on camera.
Yeah.
That is it. You're not allowed to wear a watch. You're not allowed to take your phone in.
It's like a Vegas casino.
It is.
No daylight.
I hadn't thought about that. It is like that. I wonder if they're pumping oxygen in. Yeah, well. Yeah, I'm like this headiness that you go in when
you bring you drinks.
Because it's like bizarre. And then you think, right, what am I going to cook? I wouldn't say it was cold food, but there is a long
wait.
An hour.
Yeah.
I mean, we obviously do a lot of that as well, which we are getting sexy shots, pack shots. So the camera and the people at home get the best of it. The judges get second best because everyone at home is kind of more important actually than the judge in that process.
Yeah, you make a TV program.
How did you handle the pressure? Because, or did you feel the pressure? Yeah. I mean, you've performed on stage in front of thousands of people,
but... It's funny because I had a bit of a, not a breakdown, but I had some serious mental health issues in 2016 when my marriage broke down. And I remember I couldn't face anything in life. And the only place I felt safe was on stage because it's what I was trained to do. Mm. And you kind of go into this autopilot. I don't know if you feel that when you're in the kitchen, right? But
well, you do.
That, yeah. And you kind of feel safe. It's your safe space. MasterChef was different though, because I'm not trained to be a cook and you're trying to do something you haven't got a clue. And they'll say, of course you're going to do blah, blah, blah. And you go, yeah.
Were you able to take very familiar ingredients as well? In terms
would you
do that? Because obviously with Welsh produce, you kind of were very familiar with what you were working with. Did they source that or would you sort of take the food that
they
you wanted
to cook? They would source some of it, but some of it they couldn't source. Lava bread was a particular problem for them. We have another thing called Barabrith, which is like a tea cake. So I had to get special permission in order to be able to soak my fruit in tea overnight. Otherwise, you can't really make it very well. So, and then I called upon mates. Well, I had my own pig, see? So,
oh, right.
Yeah.
You keep animals?
Well, I only keep a couple, like pigs. And then when the pigs aren't there, the lambs are in. My favourite headline, actually, because there's a few of us that own these pigs and we share a field. We kind of came up with this in the pub in
West
Wales.
Where all the best ideas happen.
So I don't really do much with the pigs, right? That's a guy called Irish Paul. Now you'll say, what's his surname? I have no idea what his surname is, right? So Irish Paul gets the pigs, Irish Paul gets the lamb, and then he kind of looks after them and we send them to slaughter. I remember being in this field with this pig, right, that I knew I was going to take on MasterChef. And I called it Salt, right after Peppa Pig, you know, Salt. And this...
Salt and Pepper.
This pig, right? This pig. We're trying to get this pig into the truck to take it to the abattoir, right?
It knows,
right?
Oh,
it's like
no.
I don't fall in for this one, mate. And I push it, right? I push the gate against this pig and the pig goes out. But as I do that, the gate comes off the hinges, right? And the pig goes, oh, hello. Right?
There's a chance.
Turns round, just tramples me, and my legs are stuck in manure, so I just fall backwards, right, like a statue, and the pig just runs over me, like trotters in the face and everything like it. I have to be power washed down in the back of the pub, right, because I'm just full of manure. I'm thinking, I'll kill that pig myself. Yeah. Right? My mate's going, don't, we need it stamped from the abattoir so you can take it. So then I send it to this lady called Ruth, who's run something called Cwm Farm Charcuterie. And we make salami, parma ham, just like the best, honestly. Mm. And there's a few of us doing it. Ken Owens, who was the captain of Wales rugby player, he makes his own biltong. Dan Lydiard keeps black beef. And so I was using all these things on MasterChef. Mm. Alan Wynne-Jones, who, you know, was captain of the Lions, he makes his own rum. Catherine Jenkins makes her own gin. So I was taking all this stuff on MasterChef and trying to use as much of it as I could.
It's so important to know where the food and the ingredients come from and if there's personal connections and people behind it.
You've got celebrity backers
rather
as well.
Rather than just a geography. But that's so important.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. It's made me more aware. And actually, lockdown made me more aware of local stuff. Mm. Because my radio show was at 9 o'clock now, but it was at 11 then. I could get up, because I didn't have to go into the office for a meeting. I could do a quick meeting on Zoom. Then I'd go down the village and buy...
And the farmers markets were still able to run because they were outside.
Exactly. And buy proper veg, proper fruit, proper meat, where you know, cheese, where you know where it comes from. I know it's boring to say shop locally and it's way more expensive sometimes. But sometimes it's not.
But the quality difference is unreal.
Because everybody goes, oysters, oh God, they're so expensive. They're about 70 pence each if you go down the fishmongers and buy them.
Kefili cheese, that's a bit special.
I've got a problem with kefili cheese, right? Great. I did use it on MasterChef, and somebody will prove me wrong in this, right? But Kefili Council, in their wisdom, decided to take the license away from, I think it was Kefili Council, from the last, they used to make it in the back of a pub, but with all the food hygiene rating and stuff, then it was, so kefili cheese is now made in Somerset.
Is it?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Wow.
Yeah. So, one of my plans is to bring it back to Wales.
That would be very cool.
Yeah, be really cool.
Get start a petition. Like that is a campaign, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, bring it home.
Yeah.
Bring it home. One of the things we also do on the podcast is ask a couple of questions from the other two guys who aren't here, Jamie and Baz. Baz was asking, is it possible to shatter glass with your voice?
I suppose it's possible if you hit the same resonator as the glass is resonating at. I don't know. I've never seen it though. Sorry, Baz.
You've never been tempted to try?
Oh, God, I've tried. Yeah, when I've had a couple, you know, you go, let's see if we can shatter this glass, screaming your head off. I remember my mate doing it. He was Norwegian. And I'm going to do a terrible Norwegian accent now. And he was screaming, trying to do this thing. And then he turned to me and he went, it tastes blood. He burst some kind of blood vessel in his neck and he's like, oh God.
Which segues nicely onto Jamie's question, which was, are there any foods that you eat or drink to protect your voice or vice versa, things you avoid in order to protect your voice?
Yeah, they say pineapple's really good for... Because the first thing, opera, right, unmiked. Mm. So you're singing like to maybe 3,000 people at the Albert Hall or 5,000 at the Albert Hall, rather. And it's totally unmiked, right? So you have to use all these resonators in your face. So your main enemy is phlegm, right?
Yeah.
Because if that gets in there, everything's blocked up. They say pineapple is quite good for... It's quite acidic, so that breaks down the phlegm. They say, I've never gone with these, right? Because I always took the decision early on, I'm in charge of my voice, not the other way around, right? Yeah. Avoid dairy. Mm-hmm. The one thing I do avoid is alcohol if I'm singing. Because... You know what it's like when you wake up after you've had a glass of red wine?
You've got a frog in your throat.
Yeah, and you think it's just because you've got a bit of a hangover, but actually it's like the tannin in red wine is awful for your voice. Really bad. It dries you out really bad, and you've just got to keep your vocal cords hydrated. So that, there's only one food I hate anyway, so...
What's that?
Oh, my God. Celery.
Yeah. Celery is an anti-food.
It's pointless.
It is pointless because it's disgusting.
And I thought this guy was a MasterChef winner. All chefs love celery.
Oh, they put it in stock. I can taste it in the stock. And I'm like, why have you put that in there? It's crap, right? Also, like, if you're eating it...
I'm so weird.
If you're eating it as it is, you've got to put, like, hummus, or you've got to put sour cream.
Cover it in other flavour.
Cover it in flavour and fat.
Just put your finger into the hummus. That's what I do. I just stick my... I don't need the celery as the vehicle. I've got my hands.
It's got fibre.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't
taste
good.
For later.
It's got weird little string in it. I'm so with you. Yeah.
I like seeing it in a Bloody Mary. Right?
Only to stir.
To take
but
it out.
But I don't want it in there.
No.
Show it the glass and clear off. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I like that. But and yeah, it's classic dishes like cool, like... Welsh call. Does that not have celery as like a
cowl
base?
No.
There we go.
It's the easiest dish in the world, though. My mother used to do it, like when it was, you go, I think it might be snowing. I'll make a pot of cowl. And she would make it in a 5 kind of gallon container.
With a tin of Campbell's and a tin of...
tin of Campbell's, yeah. It's so easy. It's potatoes, carrots, leeks, swede. Controversial. Some people parsnip, some people not. And you get a joint of lamb, and you literally put it all in with water.
And
that's it. Leave it for 2 hours. Yeah. Come back later. It tastes so good.
I mean, how can it not? When you actually hear.
Oh, if you add to
anyone
that,
who's
then,
got the sniffles, that's like medicine right there.
And put in the bowl. I know this is kind of my angina diner coming back again, but put in the bowl like a little knob of butter just to kind of cream it up and have it with bread and kefili cheese and landed. See, we put butter on Welsh cakes sometimes. And
Welsh butter's great, salty.
Yeah.
Really salty.
Yeah. Halin Môn. Do you know this salt? This is salt. Right? They did it by accident. They were trying to purify water to sell bottled water, and we're left with the salt, and now it's become one of the biggest exports. It's like Tennant water. I mean, you know, the blue and the red bottles, right? Yeah. They're iconic. Some brands really have done it. I've got to give a shout out as well for some of the beers. Veiling Vol was the first beer in Europe to go into a tin.
Is that true?
It's still going now. It's only a little family brewery. And then the Brains Brewery do something called SA, which is special ale, but we call it Skull Attack because you know you've been drinking it the next day. do you have a dirty meal at the end of a session?
Oh.
We've got a place in Cardiff called Chippy Alley. Mm. And it's like all the chip shops in one alley, and you just go down there. And it's like...
You just fill your boots.
Oh, curry and chips.
That sounds about like cheesy chips with curry sauce or gravy.
I can't do the cheese and the curry.
You can't?
No.
Curry
chips, half and half. Half rice, half chips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense. I wasn't going to bring this up, Wyn.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine has a friend...
He's seen me in there, is he?
Who was, in a Pinchos restaurant in Cardiff not too long ago. And apparently you just broke out into song. Is that standard practice?
Is that true?
Just the energy that you bring to a room?
In a restaurant in Cardiff?
Is it a Pinchos restaurant?
It's possible.
It's possible. I remember being asked to leave a place in Cardiff once, right? And my mates shouting, that should have cost you 10 grand.
Cardiff is probably the filthiest night out I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah, it was mad. It was mad. And everyone goes 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's good.
100 miles an hour. It's great. Yeah. And actually, yeah, I ended up in a chippy in Cardiff.
Yeah, yeah. You would have been in Chippy Alley.
Yeah. And I sat down with, this is a true story, sat down with my cheesy chips. They were cheesy chips. And a girl came and just sat down next to me and she went, let's have one of those. And just grab my chips. Started eating them.
But,
yeah, help yourself.
Sharing's caring.
The worst thing I've ever done in Chippy Alley, I think, is... I had a sausage chips and curry sauce, and I dropped the sausage on the floor as I came out, and I thought...
No one else saw it.
I'll have that.
You know, we're like...
Grit.
It was. That horrible black sort of coating that's over all of the chip shop floors, just covered in a bit of that.
Yeah, great.
Seasoning that.
bring it on.
While we got you, it'd be criminal for us not to subject Ben to some humiliation.
Yeah,
and I was wondering whether you could perhaps take us through some operatic vocal warm-ups. Actually, so I'm really interested in music in general, and the timbre of an opera singer's voice is very different in you know, when compared to like pop singers mm-hmm. and stuff. So do you reckon you could just explain a little bit about that and then perhaps take us both through some exercises? Yeah.
So in opera, nothing's mic'd. So you have to have what we call blade to cut through the noise, the sound. So it's like you have to place the voice in, if you look at a skull, wherever the hollows are. So in your head, around your nose, in the nose, in your cheeks, and you're like, hey. It's quite this driven noise. And then so you go from, oh, I can't really do it anymore because my voice is overtrained, I guess, but like this very soft sound if you were a pop singer, to a very direct noise that kind of cuts through. It's actually not very pleasant in a small room, but if you put it in a bigger room, then there's that. But what you got to do is you can't just build the house as it is. You've got to put foundation. So it's all about breathing.
Great.
So Ben, if you look at my stomach, which is ever expanding, right? So when I breathe, nothing moves here. Nothing moves in your chest. You say to somebody, sing as an opera singer, and the first thing they do is lift their chest.
Yeah.
So the best way person to ever look at to find it perfect breathing is a newborn baby, because they scream like hell, but they don't raise their chest. They're like,
that
is go,
so true.
So that, then you've got to breathe deep and open your throat. So you know when you went to the day off school and you try and make yourself sick at the back of your throat?
Yeah.
So it's called the epiglottis, right? And that hangs down. So you've got to try and get that out of the way. So you can, if I was to say to you both, hey, you've just won the lottery.
Yeah.
You feel the cold air on the back of your throat? That's your throat open. And then you just sing. So it's one motion in and one motion out. So if you were like, sorted food, are you there? So that's all you do. That is it.
Okay. Where are we doing
you,
that?
You do,
No, come on. You've got to do this as well.
Go
on, you do sorted food, are you there? And then I'll do sorted food, are you there? Go.
Sorted food,
are you there? Ben, you're a much better singer. Your throat's closed. You're like this. Are you there? Are you there? Getting better. I mean, you do sound like Kermit, but it is
are
getting
you
better.
There? Halfway up the stairs.
Is the stair I sit?
Is it stop? Because sit rhymes with and stop. Not.
No, yeah, stop. Yeah, yeah, no, that's right.
Could have been a very different Muppets Christmas Carol, right?
We always finish these episodes on a final question. You might have even touched upon it already, but what would you say to someone is the one thing that they have to cook and eat before they die? God. What's the one thing that you say you've just got?
Just give this a go.
Just got to give this a go.
That is a brilliant question because there's just a thousand things. Because I always think about my death row meal.
Yeah.
And when I was 50, I actually got some people in to cook me my death row meal.
What was it?
Well, my friends, without me knowing, set up the house like a court. So I was actually...
They condemned you to death.
I was actually on death row. And so they all stood up and said why I should be put to death.
Charming. We need to go to the rugby with your
mates. Oh, my God, you can come anytime you want, mate. That'd be great. You can come anytime. So I love scallops. So we had scallops to start with some like black pudding and stuff with it, just classic. Then for me, it's just a memory, right? We used to have this thing in the 70s and the 80s called a Burnie Inn, right? And basically, you could only get certain things. All you could get really was a steak.
Yeah.
And the steak came with mushrooms and chips, a grilled tomato, right? This was the choice of starters that you could have, right? Going back. And my father would always say before we go in, right, starters or pudding, you're not having both. We haven't got enough money. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Starters was prawn cocktail.
Yeah.
Garlic mushrooms, right?
Yeah.
And an orange juice. That was the choice.
A glass of orange juice?
I never chose the orange
juice.
Never. Never,
ever. Choosing the orange juice?
I don't know. But that was one of them. Then you could have that steak. And that steak is I'd say to anybody. Steak and peppercorn sauce is probably the greatest match that's ever been made with chips.
Amazing. In a sous vide, so it's perfectly cooked, perfect temperature.
And I've done some really expensive steaks and I've done some really, you know, I've tried to elevate it as much as you possibly can. It's still steak and chips, though, right?
It's classic.
It's just
and
so
it's classic
delicious.
For a reason.
Oh, yeah, I just love it. There's everything about food is in a steak and chips.
That I'd say that's a great
steak
answer.
Steak and peppercorn sauce.
Steak and peppercorn sauce.
And then rhubarb crumble and custard, right? But yeah. Don't try and give me crème anglaise, because all crème anglaise means is a small portion of custard, right? So don't try and give me that. I just want custard.
Or a proper custard.
I love this. Is normal home cook meet chef. The marriage of both. It's perfect. This is
you are.
Leave the celery out and don't give me crème anglaise.
Perfectly central. This is great.
But he'll happily have oysters in Lyon.
Yeah, definitely. Not a problem.
Too right. Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us. It's been unbelievable. And
just one more time.
Yeah.
Go compare. Yes. Thank you.
That's another £3.
Thank you.
Man,
that was awesome.
I know you were great.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.